Danny E. Casey Foundation.
Welcome to Truth Talk on WMNF 88.5 with Ahmed and Samar. This is Ahmed Badir. I'm live in Tampa, Florida. On today's program, we're going to be speaking about Governor DeSantis. Florida's governor travels to Tel Aviv, Israel tomorrow, making his way to Jerusalem, where he will hold an unprecedented cabinet meeting in Israel. This is a Florida cabinet meeting being held in Israel with the Florida cabinet. Does this violate Florida sunshine laws? What does it mean? Why are they doing it? And also your reaction about that. Also later in the program, we'll be speaking about a shooting that took place at a local mosque Sunday night, Monday morning during the month of Ramadan. The details about that and how this is impacting the Muslim community here in Tampa. This is True Talk on WMNF. We'll be right back after this short break.
يحملني معه يحملني
We're back with True Talk on WMNF 88.5. True Talk with Samar and Ahmed. Samar is traveling. I am in the studio. And now we'll be speaking about Governor Ron DeSantis heading over on an historic trip tomorrow to Israel, where he'll be visiting Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. The Tampa Bay Times is reporting DeSantis, Florida cabinet's trip to Israel will include top-tier lobbyists and academics. There's an article that was published yesterday. It goes on to say a historic visit to Israel by Governor Ron DeSantis and Florida's top elected officials will include nearly 100 people, a massive group of top-tier lobbyists, business executives, academics, and state lawmakers who will have extended opportunities to interact far from the public glare. It appears this will be the first time a meeting of the Florida cabinet will be convened abroad internationally. The cabinet is made up of the governor, attorney general, Ashley Moody, chief financial officer, Jimmy Petronis, and agriculture commissioner, Nikki Fried. The DeSantis administration released information about the trip Wednesday amidst increased scrutiny about the issues such as who will take part, costs, and how Floridians will watch or attend the cabinet meeting. Florida's open government law requires that the public be able to both view and offer comments during public meetings. When you hold a meeting so far away, how are Floridians supposed to offer public comments? How are they supposed to attend? Florida law says that you have to provide reasonable notice of when the meeting will take place. I think this meeting was announced in April, but you're talking about an international meeting, a meeting that's taking place, a cabinet meeting that's taking place in a foreign country. Why would our governor, governor of the state of Florida, and the cabinet hold their cabinet meeting in a foreign country, far away, thousands of miles away from Tallahassee, out of reach of the public, possibly, if not probably, violating state sunshine laws? How will people be able to participate? How will they be able to attend? And that is, of course, not clear. And there's plenty of scrutiny because of it. And for some reason, my computer froze. So we have a audio from that incident, but what Ron DeSantis, who when he ran as governor, he promised to be the most pro-Israel governor in America. And what troubles me about that, and of course I am a critic of Israeli policies and policies that U.S. policies towards Israel, one, because I disagree with and oppose the Israeli occupation of Palestine. I often call for equal rights of Palestinians as Israelis, Arabs and Jews in the Holy Lands. And I don't think, and it's obvious, that that's not the case right now. While Israel is recognized, it's on every map, Palestine is not. And as Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, had previously said, that Israel practices a form of apartheid against the Palestinians. So all of those things are upsetting. But, you know, when you have a sitting governor in Florida that's supposed to do the business of Floridians, taking his cabinet and a delegation of some of the most powerful people in Florida, including lobbyists and business executives, on an official trip to Israel, and on top of that, holding the cabinet meeting, which is mandated by the Florida Constitution, on foreign soil, that just does not make sense. And what even makes less sense is that there's not some sort of public outrage that this is happening. Why aren't media and newspapers highly critical of this? Why are newspapers and editors and editorials across the state questioning and, you know, raising concerns about how this is happening and why is it happening. It's mind-boggling, actually. And so we're going to take your phone calls in a little bit about this. And don't forget, later on in the program, we're going to be speaking about the shooting that took place at a local mosque last Sunday night, Monday morning. But this delegation, official delegation, led by the governor, starts tomorrow. Almost 100 people will be flying to Tel Aviv, Israel, and then making their way to Jerusalem, where they'll be holding this cabinet meeting inside the American U.S. Embassy in Israel. Of course, 1 year ago, it was a controversial move to indoctrinate or to open up the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, something that has been opposed and vetoed for many years by previous presidents, both Democrats and Republicans, but put forward and opened by President Trump. It was controversial because Jerusalem is a contested city. For a very long time, governments, especially right-wing governments in Israel, have been calling for the establishment or the recognition of Jerusalem, the holy city that's holy to Jews, Christians, and Muslims, to recognize that as the official capital of Israel, as the Israeli politicians call it, the United Israel, meaning both the West and East Jerusalem, that would be recognized as Israel's capital. And for a long time, and of course, Israel's capital has always been Tel Aviv. And president after president refused to do that, but President Trump came along and unilaterally moved the embassy despite lots of uproar here and in Palestine. Even some Israelis were opposed to the move because they knew that this would kill any future peace deals, that this would halt peace negotiations and would not move forward. The embassy was open. Ron DeSantis, when he was in Congress, was one of the biggest advocates for this move, always promising to be the most pro-Israel politician, and not only in Congress, but again when he was campaigning for Florida's governor on the campaign trail, over and over promised to be the most pro-Israel governor in America. And why would a governor, somebody campaigning for a governor, want to be the most pro-Israel governor? Unless, of course, they're trying to pander to certain demographics in the state. And trying to be the most pro-Israel governor in America, does that mean doing everything then that Benjamin Netanyahu wants and his party, and now very right-wing, some including extremist elements within his governing coalition, appeasing them and doing whatever they want, even if it goes against the interest of the long-term interests of Israel and the long-term interest of any future peace negotiations with the Palestinians. I'm really troubled by this cabinet meeting is being held there because it violates so many things as far as our constitution here, Florida's constitution and sunshine laws, as well as this overemphasis on and this competition and turning the Middle East process or the Middle East conflict between Israelis and Palestinians into some sort of political or partisan political wedge issue that each party is trying to represent themselves as the more pro-Israel side. Well, where's the party that's trying to represent themselves as the pro-Palestine side or pro-peace side? Where is the neutral brokers and the honest brokers, the people that are promising actually to further peace rather than just to side with what many call apartheid? We're going to get to that. We're going to just take a quick music break because my computer is not working very well. And when we come back, we'll be discussing this and more. This is True Talk on WMNF. Welcome back to True Talk on WMNF 80.5. Fix the computer issue. It's amazing. If your computer's down, you can't take phone calls. You can't do a lot of things. We're talking about Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, going on an unprecedented trip to Israel, visiting Israel, Tel Aviv, and Jerusalem, and holding Florida's cabinet meeting there in Israel at the U.S. Embassy, the new embassy that's been moved to Jerusalem. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663, and our phone number or our email is DJ at WMNF88.5. You have to excuse me, I'm fasting, and for some reason when you're fasting for 30 days, only eating at night, my schedule is completely upside down. Didn't have any coffee, and just getting into, I guess I'm just, my body has just adjusted to this Ramadan schedule, as we call it. As many listeners know, I am I'm a Muslim, follow the Muslim faith, practice Islam, and part of Islam means to fast the month of Ramadan. We're in Ramadan right now. There's about 10 days left. And for every day during the month of Ramadan, we're fasting, and which means we don't eat or drink any food or liquids. Yes, and that includes water. Starting about an hour before sunrise until sunset. So sunset now is about 8:15 p.m. And we're able to eat and drink after that up until, again, about an hour before sunrise, which is about 5:25 a.m. is when we stop, when we can have our last sip of water or drink. Most people are sleeping at that time, including myself, except I do get up around 5 a.m. to have something to eat or a snack just to prepare me for the day. And usually I'll go back and take a nap, and there you have it. That's my schedule right now. So oftentimes we stay up really late during Ramadan, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning. So not a lot of sleep happening, and shorter naps throughout the day from time to time when people are not working. But back to our subject at hand, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Are you troubled by Governor DeSantis' first international trip as governor, and he chose to go to Israel? Not only that, but taking a delegation of close to 100 people with him, including lobbyists, powerful lobbyists, business executives. The Florida's cabinet will actually hold its official meeting on foreign soil. Never happened before. Of course, the capital of Florida is Tallahassee. It's not Jerusalem, but Governor DeSantis, who promised to be Florida's most pro-Israel governor, is now on his first international trip, timed with around the time when the Jerusalem, well, it's already passed, but when the embassy was moved to Jerusalem, which I believe Ron DeSantis attended and, you know, campaigned on as one of his success, you know, items. But here's a a quote or a comment by Barbara Peterson. She's with the First Amendment Foundation. Her reaction to the governor's trip there and her concerns. Listen to this and call us at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org.
Well, there are concerns, absolutely. And I am a bit worried about it, I mean, for all sorts of reasons. One, this meeting was announced back in April. Yesterday, an agenda of the meeting was finally provided, about a week before the actual meeting. We had been told initially not to worry, that the cabinet would only be taking ceremonial action. But then when you look at the agenda, they're actually discussing some fairly substantial issue that Floridians care about. So I was worried about the notice. The lack of notice, because if people do want to attend that meeting, they didn't find out yesterday into what the cabinet's talking about, and now they're going to be scrambling to try to find flight reservations, hotel reservations, assuming they can afford it. We still have not seen any substantive information on how the meeting is going to be webcast or video cast. There's a provision in Florida law that allows state-level agencies like the cabinet to hold meetings via video conferencing methods. So the cabinet's allowed to do that. We just don't know how they're going to do it. We also don't know exactly what time the meeting is going to commence. I saw 8:30, but the problem is there's a seven-hour time difference too.
Well, we're hearing your concerns, but I just want to get to the bottom line. Do you think that it's a violation of Florida's sunshine laws?
I think it could be a violation. Only a court can say whether there's an actual violation of law. I think they're pushing the line towards a violation. You know, whether that notice that we got yesterday was reasonable under the law is a big question. You know, there's all sorts of case law and attorney general's opinions that say you're supposed to, that an agency, a collegial body, which is what the cabinet is, that a government collegial body should hold meetings in locations where it's easy for people to attend. It's not easy getting to Israel, and it may not be easy getting into the U.S. Embassy in Israel. So, yes, there are lots of sunshine law questions. I myself can't say that there is a violation. Only the court can say that.
That was Barbara Peterson with the First Amendment Foundation speaking to WMNF Sean Kinnan. You can hear more of her interview at 3:30 p.m. on 88.5 right here. She raises some really, you know, real concerns. How are people supposed to make it to the meeting? Yes, Florida law does allow for the cabinet meeting to be done through some sort of video conferencing, but that means, you know, if people can't make it to Tallahassee, they can join by video conferencing, not necessarily being held. The actual physical meeting is being held in one of the most secure buildings in the world and one of the hardest to get into. That seems to be a violation, some sort of violation of sunshine laws. Obviously, only, you know, I mean, there's no lawsuit as of right now about this, but it definitely sets a bad precedent. Adam Willis writes about this, sends an email and says, it shows who DeSantis really cares about. Instead of having his cabinet meeting in a foreign country, he could have moved it to a different city in Florida to make it more accessible to people. Instead, he's having it in Israel just to try to score political points. I assume our taxpayer dollars are funding this trip as well. Extremely disappointing. Edward writes in, a political move to please far-right extremist Floridians. And by the way, if you want to also comment on this, you can email us at dj@wmnf or call us at 813-239-9663. 813-239-9663. Edward goes on to say, we can't give 30 million citizens of Florida health care, but we can spend money for political points while making a mockery of our so-called democracy. This is ridiculous. This is a ridiculous stunt. This ridiculous stunt is a sham and a shame and does nothing to bring peace and understanding to the volatile Israel-Palestinian human rights conflicts. Angry and ashamed to be Floridian while paying taxes that will be used for nefarious purposes such as this. Also via text messages, it says, doesn't the scripture say something about making your offerings in private and your prayers and supplications in private? We'll also find it a shame that people are overly concerned with traditions of man and lacked understanding of what truth really is. I'm not sure. Okay. Again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Very disappointing to see that happening and about this trip. And I'm just surprised that there's not more outrage, especially from media professionals. Just saw a flash on the news right now that Harvey Weinstein has reached a $44 million settlement in the harassment cases that were against him. Again, ending that in some sort of financial resolution or settlement instead of jail time. It is troubling, back to this issue of Ron DeSantis, who promised to be the most pro-Israel governor in America. How about just being the most pro-people or pro-American governor in America, as serving the needs of Floridians. And as it was, as one of the, I think it was Adam who mentioned, what a great idea. Move the cabinet meeting across the state of Florida so it can be more accessible. Of course, Tallahassee is not very accessible. It's not a very accessible city for the entire state. You know, depending on where you are, you could be traveling 8, 9, or 10 hours to get to Tallahassee. For example, if you're in Key West, making the cabinet meeting more accessible to the people of Florida, the people that elected you, the people that you serve, instead of taking your meeting to international soil, to a foreign country, and making it the meeting even less accessible. And who gets to go on this trip? Some of the most powerful people in the state, some of the biggest lobbyists, and to have access and meetings and interactions and engagement far away from public scrutiny all the way across the world. Again, as some people had mentioned earlier, that obviously this is designed to score political points with certain voters. So you can comment on this by calling or emailing us. Our email is dj@wmnf.org, and our phone number is 813-239-9663. And we're going to shift, after this short break, we're going to shift to a tragic shooting that took place here locally at the Islamic Society of Tampa. And it happened Sunday night into Monday morning. What that shooting is doing to that community and the impact there, that actually happens to be the mosque where I worship. And will the fact that this happened during the month of Ramadan is having even more of an impact? So when we come back, we'll be speaking about that. And of course, your phone calls. This is True Talk on WMNF 88.5. We'll be right back. Welcome back to True Talk on WMNF. We have Lori. Lori, you're from St. Petersburg. Go ahead, you're on True Talk.
You sound about as discouraged as I feel. Yesterday I actually came to a point where I was like, I have to stop, you know, watching the news so much and paying so much attention. But I can't do that because I just can't not watch. But I just briefly opened up Facebook. I saw about, you know, the expanding the powers of the Attorney General. And my only thought about that right now is that if we can get people, Democrats, independents, if they're willing, third party people, swarm the polls in 2020, and then, oh, what we can do with these expanded powers. That's almost my only hope in getting any kind of power back in the Supreme Court or any of these, circuit judges and things that he's appointed. So in some weird way, it gives me a ray of hope that he'll do it, and then we can get in there and take advantage of it.
And then use it for the right thing.
Exactly, use it for the right thing. Try to, you know, because they're already coming after women with the abortion laws. Next, it's going to be the gays, right? I'm gay. Lesbian, it's horrifying. So, you know, I know there's talk about potentially expanding, you know, the Supreme Court, that sort of thing. But if they want to play this way, we need to play it, you know, obviously for the good. And I really hope that we all can get together and third-party people, please, please, please consider voting for the Democrat just to stop the end of the world and the destruction of the planet. And I really wish we could all come together and then somehow work together, you know, in changing the Democratic Party. But first, we've got to stop this.
Okay, thank you, Lori. Julie, you're on True Talk. Go ahead. Julie from Tampa, speaking to the phone, please.
Assalamu alaikum, brother. How are you?
Alaikum salam.
Regarding the tragedy at the masjid, this is the first masjid that I ever entered 18 years ago, and it's also where I go to study Islam and worship, and it has grown. Our community has grown so much, and it's so beautiful. And Ramadan is so beautiful. And then I just don't understand my opinion about bringing a loaded gun when you're going to a house of worship to pray. Makes no sense to me. I don't know the details of the circumstance, except for I know the widow, who happens to be a friend of mine for a long time, and to see people grieving, we're all sad, because when one suffers, we all suffer.
Okay, well, let me provide some context to listeners so that they know what you're referring to, and maybe you could call back in or stay on the line. So what caller Julie is referring to was a shooting that took place Sunday night into Monday morning at midnight. This past Sunday, at the Islamic Society of Tampa Bay, there was a fatal shooting that took place that's shocked the community there and shocked the Muslim community across Tampa Bay and, you know, frankly, across the United States. When you hear a shooting at a mosque, you often think of an attack by some sort of anti-Muslim person, a hate crime that's taking place. And that's what many people thought at the beginning. It later turned out to be that this was two individuals who happened to be from the Muslim community, one killing the other individual. And it's not really clear what led to this, the altercation that ended up in this fatal shooting, but the police or the sheriff's department is currently investigating it. But what we know so far was that around midnight, and at that point, because it's the month of Ramadan, and it's the month of fasting, as I was mentioning earlier, that during the day we're fasting up until sunset. So at sunset, after sunset, there are a number of events daily or nightly at Islamic houses of worship across the country and across the world. That includes nightly prayers. It includes actually breaking the fast, having a meal. Many mosques are holding these iftars, community iftars, where the community actually breaks fast and has a meal together on their premises. And so from sunset up until about 11 o'clock at night, there are a series of activities nightly at Islamic centers, and where are, you know, there are often hundreds of people. And this past Sunday night, it was just another Ramadan night. And after everything was closed and people were going home, this tragedy took place between two individuals. One of those individuals was a volunteer at the mosque. He wasn't in any formal staff position, but he was a volunteer at the mosque, and he was on his way home. At the same time, another member of the community who was not at the mosque that night, but was driving through the parking lot. And I say driving through the parking lot because if you know the where this mosque or this Islamic center is located, it has an access road that leads to it. And oftentimes individuals will use the access road as a shortcut to get to the other side of the center. And the person ended up being killed, sadly, that night, actually lives on the other side of the mosque on an adjacent road, and was cutting through the parking lot to get to his home. and came head-to-head with this individual. It seemed like a chance meeting, and they had some sort of, they exchanged some words, and there was an altercation very briefly because it happened so quickly from what in witnesses and investigators have seen so far. And there was this fatal shooting. No one actually saw the incident from beginning to end to know exactly what led to what. But what they do know is that they ran into each other. One was driving, one was walking. And there was some sort of discussion. The person who was driving the car that ended up being killed actually stepped out of the car. There was some sort of exchange very quickly. And the person that was walking ended up shooting the individual. What turned out to be, for the first, I guess, half hour to 45 minutes, no one knew the identity of the person that was shot. And people on the scene assumed that this was could have possibly been some sort of intruder trying to attack the mosque. And this individual who was from the community used a concealed weapon. It turns out he was carrying a and was licensed to carry a concealed weapon, used it against this individual. Later, people discover that this person is actually from the Muslim community as well. And because of the lack of information, a lot of rumors started circulating. Some as far as, you know, saying that that the person that carried out the shooting was the security guard or the head of security at the mosque. And the person that was shot was actually coming try to worship at the mosque, and this person killed him. Some of these conspiracies and rumors were spreading, you know, rapidly across the country, because even though, the Muslim community is a small community, it counts for like 1% or 1.5%, maximum 2% of the U.S. population. But, you know, Muslims are somehow connected through their own social, social media accounts and networks and connections between different houses of worship and family members. So the information was spreading across the country. But because of the lack of information and lack of knowing what the real motive is and how could something like this happen, there were a lot of rumors circulating. Some of those rumors are now getting put to rest as more information comes out. And up until now, the actual person that carried out the shooting has not been charged. And the sheriff's office has not really released any details as to why that is or what's happening, only to say that the investigation is continuing and they will make their conclusions soon. So obviously a lot of people are wondering, you know, if the individual that carried out the shooting is claiming some sort of self-defense. Are they invoking the very controversial stand your ground laws, which I myself have opposed and lobbied against in Tallahassee, and think it's a necessary law that actually makes our society less safe, and it's very difficult and unfair, especially when the person that was shot is killed, because it in a way eliminates the witnesses. So the community obviously is traumatized by this, and the leadership locally there, our prayers are with them, trying to calm nerves. Because again, as people consider houses of worship as sacred spaces, places where you should be able to feel safe, to be able to take your family, not to have to worry about shootings or mass shootings. And especially after New Zealand, there was, Muslims across the country here, even though it happened so far away, were on edge, because that's like the nightmare situation. That as you sit in your mosque praying, somebody comes in and carries out this mass shooting, just as it would be a nightmare situation at synagogues where similar mass shootings have taken place, like in Pennsylvania. I mean, it's, when you're just focused on worship and God, and where it's happened to churches, especially black churches, where, a gunman comes in and starts shooting, But in this situation, that wasn't the case. In this situation, it wasn't the community that was threatened directly. It turns out, what we learned, that the two individuals involved actually have had a longstanding conflict that goes back a couple of years, and that has led to previous altercations between the two individuals. It doesn't seem like, doesn't appear that this meeting that took place or running into each other was somehow premeditated. I mean, again, we don't have all the details, but it's just from everyone we talked to, that doesn't seem to be the case. It was just a chance encounter between two people who knew each other that ended in a very horrible way. When they recognized that they knew each other, or, you know, again, and not very, very many, not many witnesses that actually observed the altercation to know what they were arguing about. But it's clear from several people that know the individuals that they've had a history of conflict in the past. So it seems like this is a personal conflict between two people that ended tragically. But it raises the question, should people carry guns when they go to houses of worship? I'm not a gun advocate, but then it's like a, you know, a situation where people are afraid to go to houses of worship without being armed. Or, I mean, some of them, of course, very few people are armed at mosques or churches, especially at mosques. But if you have this situation, it goes to the idea of, you know, that somehow having more weapons will protect us from the bad guys. Well, what if you have situations like this where you have personal conflicts and it gets heated? And the last thing that you want to have is a gun to be around. But then do situations like this ruin it for other people, for people that actually want to use guns to deter would-be attackers, would-be mass shooters? Does that make it more difficult? You know, and if it extending that same idea to other houses of worship, people that would want to carry weapons and concealed weapons to churches or to schools, as the governor and the legislation to arm teachers. What if those teachers have a bad day? What if those teachers that are armed have a conflict with another teacher and now they have a gun with them? When people break out into some sort of argument or fight or passionate, you know, and they become angry, do you want those individuals to be carrying a weapon with them at a school or at a church where passion can run high at times, especially if those people have a history of having a problem with other people? I'm going to, before I go back to Julie, Teddy has a quick comment. Teddy, go ahead. You're on True Talk.
Yes. I just wanted to know, did the person who got killed, were they armed?
The police have not released that information, but you know, from witnesses on the scene, they did not see a weapon with the person that was killed.
Did he shoot the man more than once?
The person, I think, it was shot twice, so there was two shots.
I don't know. I just don't get it. A man with a gun against a man who doesn't have a gun, you don't have to kill him. It's just it's wrong. And I agree with you in your position on the law and on bringing a gun to a house of worship.
You know what I found out in discussing this, especially people that take concealed weapon, because in order to have a concealed weapon license, you have to actually take a class. And I spoke to a couple of people about this that took the class, and they said, you know, in the class, they actually teach you to shoot to kill. And I was surprised by that because I've never taken the class. And they said, like, more than one person that took the class says the instructors tell them that to shoot multiple times, make sure you kill the person, because if they end up just being injured, I mean, this is the crazy, you know, justification that these instructors are giving, that if somehow they're injured and they're not fully killed, oh, well, they'll, you know, sue you for everything you have. There's so much liability at stake. And, you know, you want to eliminate this threat, because if they do survive this, you'll lose everything you have. So I was very surprised by that, because I think, you know, if you're carrying a weapon, all you want to do is neutralize the threat. You want to save yourself, not kill the other person.
Right. I agree with that.
So I don't know. Maybe people should look into these classes and what they're actually teaching there. Because again, it goes into this militarized idea of, you know, when police actually pull out their weapons and kill suspects, that maybe even cause a little bit of a threat, but what about just neutralizing them, like shooting them in the leg? And they always seem to shoot to kill, to eliminate the people.
Shooting them with a gun. Gun's a pretty handy weapon without being shot.
Right. Well, thanks for calling, Teddy.
All right.
I want to go back to Julie, who is actually from the Muslim community, who is obviously shook up by this. Julie, you're back with True Talk.
Yes, I am. The lessons to be learned here are, for Ramadan, people that don't know about Islam, is in Ramadan we should not even argue with each other.
Right.
For the sake of Allah. This is a peaceful religion. And there's two places that I feel completely safe, and that's my home and at the masjid. I'm sitting here right now. I just pulled in because it's Friday, Juma prayer. And it's a senseless tragedy. I don't think, and I agree with you, Brother Ahmed, I do not advocate everybody having guns, loaded weapons, and I trust our law enforcement to do the investigation and to come to the, justice to be resolved.
Let me ask you this. I mean, since the shooting took place, do you think people are scared to go to the mosque? Are they worried?
No, not scared to go to the mosque, but it's just opening a world of dialogue between us all about something that is affecting this country immensely, like the NRA and the gun rights. I'm scared of guns, and I would never own a gun. But I did grow up with guns in the home. I've been trained to shoot, and I've been trained in,
When you say you were trained, because, Julie, you're saying you're Muslim, but were you born Muslim?
No. I've been a Muslim for going on 18 years.
So when you say that you were trained to use guns and stuff, that's before you were Muslim.
As a child. I grew up in Tampa. I'm a Tampa native. We've got 5 generations from Tampa area. And it's just, I come from pioneer people back in Tennessee, Kentucky. Everybody had a gun. Mm. It's just like you have land, you have a home, everybody has a gun to protect. It goes back to the Wild Wild West, but I based my opinions and my actions. I've learned from actually the Andy Griffith Show. Andy was the cool-headed, logical, responsible authority in Mayberry, and Barney was the nervous Nelly, and I think I'm a nervous Nelly, too. But Barney was given, as a deputy, was given a gun, but he had one bullet, and he had to keep it in his pocket, I talked to a lot of people, and they agree, Mayberry... I mean, we do have a small town mentality here, but I do want to address that we do feel safe, all of us with each other and at the masjid. This is not going to affect anything. I'm more scared of driving on the roads, to be honest with you, than any threat that could come at the masjid.
Okay, Julia, we're almost out of time, so thank you so much for calling. We got a couple of emails that came in. Lori sends a message saying, I had just tuned in. I'm so sorry. My sympathies, referring to the shooting. And Clark is saying, my heart goes out to the Muslim community for the shooting. I wanted to show personal support for this trauma coming to our peaceful community to go to the funeral services. But I only knew the congregants, a few congregants, and did not know those involved. Would it have been acceptable to attend, or was it more appropriate that I just attended the Mass at Sacred Heart at the same time and pray? I think both are okay. Anyway, thinking of you all during Ramadan. Thank you, Clark. Attending and praying for our community at your Mass is good. Houses of worship this coming Sunday, praying for our community is also very appropriate. And also being able to attend the funeral. Would have been appropriate. There's going to be an interfaith iftar or breaking fast at the mosque, and you could also show your support there on June 1st, Interfaith Iftar. You can actually contact Islamic Society of Tampa Bay for more information and to RSVP. And we maybe can link that on our website or our Facebook page for True Talk radio show on Facebook. We can post a link there where you can RSVP. We're out of time. NPR is next, and after that is Radioactivity with Rob Lori. This is True Talk on WMNF Tampa. Have a great weekend.